Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Miriam and Chris. After Miriam finished treatment for breast cancer, she decided she wanted to do something to help others like her. This prompted her husband, Chris, to explore how he could also provide support. Miriam and Chris, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting us on this podcast. Lovely to be here.
It's our pleasure.
Lovely. Thank you both. So I was thinking, Miriam, could you please start off by just telling us a little bit about your diagnosis? How did you feel upon initially receiving that news and how did you respond to the subsequent treatment?
Initially, I had a very strong feeling that the prognosis was going to be positive in that I had breast cancer prior to actually seeing the consultant and the nurse on the day, which was the 12th of June, 2020. But actually, when I received the news, I burst into tears and I actually became quite hysterical. I really couldn't stop crying. I hadn't absorbed it. It was almost surreal that it was happening to someone else. And we had to go through all the motions, what was going to happen and the next stage. And literally 12 days after the diagnosis, 4 days after my 66th birthday, I had surgery. But on the way home, I remember we were both, I think, numb. But the one thing we said was, which we've always done, we would discuss it. We would support each other, of course, having been together for the last, at that point, 24 years, happily married. And we said, whatever it takes, we will get through this. Health and well-being have been a huge part of my life for 35 years. I've written about it. I've helped other people. I've written on other health platforms. And it was almost like, is this really happening to me? And then I just accepted. It was like walking into an abyss. I had no concept or idea of the next steps and the surgery and how I was going to feel on the day. Now, this was through COVID. So even more. And at the best of times, I live with ME and fibromyalgia. So I'm hugely vulnerable anyway. I'm just very glad that I hadn't left it, that I took that leap of faith and that diagnosis was positive. But I was looked after so well by the NHS. After my surgery, you can imagine it was... The two people who supported me, my core people, was my sister and darling Chris here. I mean, I just took it hour by hour, day by day. And actually, I was very accepting of the situation simply because my surgeon, Dr. Tiana, and the nurses who looked after me on that day gave me a lot of reassurance. So I'm strong. And I just knew with what I've been through health-wise over the last few years, I just felt, well, I'll just do the best I can. All I can do is take one step, followed by another, followed by another. I responded to treatment, I believe, very, very well. I mean, I'm at the best of times, I live a very healthy life. I have a very strict routine and way of eating, of living my days, my hours, of rest time, as I said, of exercise, of sleeping, of working, because I'm a published author. So I think that helped me. And actually, within a month, I was back at my desk. So I think that helped me. That was a kind of a therapy. Also, as I said, having Chris and Ursula around me, who were just so supportive. And eventually, I mean, because of my background of health and well-being, and I've talked about it publicly, and I've written about it. But a year down the road, I have to say, I was at a crossroads, and I hadn't really shared it publicly. And I saw my oncologist, and she asked about my support and whatever. And I said, well, outside of my family, I haven't had any. And within 48 hours, I was in contact with Breast Cancer Now. Someone like me contacted me. And I even now find it quite emotional. I probably had 4 conversations with the volunteers who've been on the same path. Initially, I spoke to the wonderful lady, Stephanie, who looked after all the volunteers. And they so took my story. She so took my story on board. And then what they did was Stephanie and her team tried to weave that thread and find the people who'd been on the same journey as me. So it was an ME journey, a fibromyalgia, and then breast cancer, radiotherapy and recovery. And I found it's not that I didn't know what to do, but I hadn't perhaps dealt with it emotionally. And I also think that hearing someone else who's been on that journey, that I wasn't alone, and that the volunteers who spoke with me were so open and honest that I really felt they were on the same page as myself. And we laughed, we cried, and we did all of that. And their generosity and their kindness and their support in those 4 conversations, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. It really, really was so helpful, and it helped me move forward.
Mm. And Miriam, that's so lovely to hear. And I want to talk a bit more about that side of things in a minute. But I just want to touch on something you said there about, even though you'd sort of conceptually accepted that, you know, you might get this diagnosis, even then it still hit you really hard. And it just kind of shows that you can prepare for these things, or you believe you can prepare for these things as much as possible, but the reality of it is still very different. And that's not just something that people experiencing a diagnosis themselves will feel. It's also something that we hear from partners as well, and, you know, loved ones that are supporting those people. So I wonder, Chris, can we go to you a little bit and talk about how you felt during this time? I know Miriam said that the two of you were able to speak very openly about this. But I think, just as, you know, Miriam might have not been able to entirely express some of those emotions without speaking to someone who'd also been down that road, was there anything that you were kind of feeling at that time? Was there anything that you were dealing with by yourself? Or did you kind of deal with all those things together?
I went into what I call automatic mode. I'm very lucky. I come from a medical family. And I remember my father and his profession. I knew what he was dealing with each day. Sadly, I was with him when he was diagnosed with cancer 12 years ago. And I remember coming out of the hospital. And I remember it was like you go into auto mode. It's a bit like, I'm sure, sadly, we've all been there. You're going to a funeral in a car. You're in the hearse. Life is going on all around you, but you're in the car. Mm. And for you, it's very different in there. And I remember the diagnosis in the room. I remember Miriam getting very upset. And I thought, okay, well, what am I going to do? Well, you've got 2 ways of dealing with things. Now, everybody's going to react differently. You can either fall apart, or you can, as we decided, cancer, the C was not going to sit on Miriam's shoulder or mine, and we will get on out with our lives as best as we could. And on the way home from Canterbury down to the marsh where we were living, that's the discussion we had within sort of about half an hour, 45 minutes. And we just decided from there in, well, we'll get on with it. And Miriam celebrated her birthday 4 days before the operation.
And I felt amazing, can I say? I've never felt so good. And I put up photographs then, and people were saying, wow, I never know. You look at, and of course, nobody knew. I cannot describe it, because maybe 3-4 times a year, I get this lovely energy and feeling and calm. And that's what I felt on my birthday. Carry on. Sorry.
This is how we are. I wait permission, and then on I go. Joking aside, so Miriam had the op on the 30th, and she was very lucky because at that time the NHS were wanting to remove any risk of COVID from the main hospitals. So she was put into a private hospital for the day, and as Miriam adhered to, she got superb treatment that day, and her surgeon, first class, And I collected her in the evening, and we came home. And there's, you know, there's always a little bit of black humour. it was a bit chilly, and Miriam was going to sleep in one of our spare bedrooms at the back of the house, and the back of the guest room, and that room could always be a bit chilly. So I seem to remember, was that when I put the hot water bottle in?
Yeah, and I
put the hot water bottle in, but of course I forgot to tighten the top up. So when I came home, it had leaked a bit. But hey, never mind. As I say, there's always humour, and there's always something, I know, it just takes your mind off it. So we just got on with it, and I had to help Miriam change her dressings,
for a week or so. Surgery.
She had to go to the surgery. And then, if you remember, I changed, helped you change a couple of dressings as well. And really, yes, it was. Miriam was in bed for an actual week, and she slept a lot. And I was just bringing her up, you know, whatever meals she wanted. But I admire her; she just got on with it. And you know, there is nothing that stops her. As I say, you've got two options. So that's the way we carried on actually through the first year. But I remember early, it was around March, April the following year, Miriam was saying that beginning, you know, she didn't know who to talk to. She hadn't received any actual support as promised. And when she went, as we said, to meet her oncologist, she was brilliant in so many ways. And with 48 hours, we heard from you. And that was wonderful. And as you know, with the role I have now, as a volunteer telephone supporter for men, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later as to how that came about. It was very interesting for me to hear from Miriam how the telephone supporter at the other end of the line spoke to her. And we just went from there. And yes, honestly, we just got on with it.
Yeah. It certainly didn't define myself, and it certainly didn't define us.
No.
And I also think the help is not that I didn't have the knowledge, because I'm very good at research and also I'm very curious. So I would never take anyone's word for anything. And I researched everything. But it was, you know, nobody, you know, when people say, oh, I know. No, they don't. Unless you've walked in similar shoes, you can't. And that's what the volunteers had. They had experience. They had walked maybe a slightly different path to me. Maybe they, you know, their experience was different. The fallout was different. But, you know, we knew what it was like, and we knew. And that support, a lot of gratitude, to them. They were fantastic.
That's so wonderful to hear. And just from speaking to the two of you now, actually, I can see your dynamic playing out, and just the way that you talk with one another and kind of wait for one another, and kind of there is even that open communication there. So I can really see how that would have worked, you know, getting something which is quite a heavy burden to bear. And, you know, a lot of the time, no matter how long you've been together, you know, decades, it is something that people struggle to navigate sometimes and think, well, you know, we've never had to encounter an obstacle like this. Where do we go? But your very open communication and just, Chris, like you say, there's sort of like little moments of humour and just kind of keeping it human in a way seem to really help.
Yeah.
But Miriam, you sought out support from, you said from you, but you mean obviously Breast Cancer Now, not me personally. I wish I could take credit for that. But yeah, Breast Cancer Now, and their Someone Like Me service is obviously fantastic. That supported you. And even if you say their journey was slightly different, still able to work out someone who could help you.
Yeah.
And I know that then sort of prompted you into eventually wanting to support others. So was there anything in particular that you hoped to be able to provide people with?
I had been saying to Chris, have you ever thought about becoming a volunteer? Because Chris is a brilliant listener. He has been an incredible mentor and coach, not just in other charities, but through his working professional life. And he is a bit of an entrepreneur as well. And he was always the one to kind of calm the fires. But also, he's always given a really good, what would I say, an unbiased opinion and maybe suggestion. And I just said to him, have you ever considered that? And Chris will follow that up. For me, as it happened, all the way through seeing my oncologist, she had said to me, because it was COVID, because of what was happening, she said, Miriam, you've got the skill set. Have you ever considered right now, she said, being the voice of the NHS, or would you consider rather being the voice of the NHS? I'm thinking, pardon, because I hadn't gone through my radiotherapy at this stage or anything. And she said, you've got the skill set. And what's been happening with the NHS, and it's really of great concern, is that women are not coming forward. They have symptoms, but they're afraid either they'll get COVID, they won't be looked after. And then they're also saying, maybe I'm wasting people's time. Or maybe the people around them are saying, oh, don't bother them. And she said, would you be prepared to speak to the PR communications, team within the NHS, which was Medway and Maidstone? And I said, yes, but obviously, she said, obviously, we'd wait till after your radiotherapy and see how you are. So I said yes, and I actually became the voice for the Safe Access campaign for breast cancer for women. And I think that may have encouraged Chris to take on board when he heard this. And so, I didn't know what the outcome, but it was quite incredible because the BBC picked up on it, ITV picked up on it. It went right across all the NHS hospitals, and trust. Even now, sometimes it's not hilarious. I have met people and they said, I remember you da 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 da. And I said, well, look, even if it meant that one woman at that point, one person thought, because I said to people, whatever happens, please don't leave it. You will be looked after. Take that step, whatever the outcome, take that step. That's a positive step. I can't remember all the details of what I said at the time, but, obviously, I believe it was effective. So that was my initial way of giving back because I didn't feel able to physically go out at that point, and I'm still in recovery. But it is my plan to support what Chris is going to talk about now, what he does now.
Well, interestingly enough, it was last October. I was invited by the CEO of a local community hub, who he and I had become professional friends initially when I was CEO of another charity locally. And he knew about Miriam's breast cancer. And he said, Chris, look, we're going to be starting a cancer support group. Would you be interested in being a coordinator? And I said, yes, immediately, because I've been able to support Miriam and I know that I'm a good listener and I can support other people. At the same time, within a few weeks, Miriam had a call with the lady that was supporting her. And I think from memory, she said to you, would Chris like any support? Because we have male volunteers.
Has Chris thought about, yeah.
And I said to Miriam, immediately I thought, well, I'm okay, but I think what I'll do, I'll have a conversation. It turned out to be a gentleman called Graham. And I liked his manner. I liked his relaxed manner. And I thought, well, I can do that. And I was duly trained through January. And that's a feat in its own right, because there's not many people that can train me.
Yeah.
But the skills that I learned there, and they were very interesting training sessions, because I learned from them. I was reminded of things from that I had learned through my career, not necessarily anything to do with cancer, but I'd learned. So yes, I was accepted. I've supported two men so far, and I believe Donna's going to phone me in the next 24 hours with someone else. The long and the short of it is, I find it very rewarding. I find both very rewarding, both the cancer support group and doing what I do on the telephone. I think, as with Miriam, it's so important to help other people. People need to be able to just let it all out. We had a lady yesterday. She had a mastectomy. And for 35 minutes, she told her story because she had not been able to let it out. to anybody outside the family, and walked away 2 hours later, relieved, being made aware of someone like me at Breast Cancer Now, a couple of booklets that we'd given her to support where she was. And she'll join us again in 2 weeks. And that to me is wonderful. That to me is what it's all about, exactly as Miriam did. And that's why I do what I'm doing for someone like me.
Yes. And our health and our lives matter. We matter as women. And equally, the partners that are supporting us, they matter as well. We each have to be given a voice. It's so important. And I am, and you are as well, passionate about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, everything you've just said there, it's so, so important. And I really feel that passion in both of you, what you're saying. And I really like how you each took your own kind of expertise and just shaped it in a way that you knew could help other people. So yourself, Miriam, you say you've got a long history of kind of, health awareness and writing about these things, and you can share that knowledge as well as a more recent experience with breast cancer. You've got something that goes back much further that you can draw on that knowledge. And Chris, you say yourself, you're a good listener. And what more can we ask for than a good listener, especially for people who are experiencing something that's very difficult? And I've certainly had conversations with people where I know I will just let them talk for however long they need, because you come away from it knowing that, it may feel very passive, but you know that you've helped them. And
that feels really,
it sounds selfish, doesn't it? But it feels good to know that you've done the right thing.
You've got to get some reward. It's so important. And our cancer support group, over the last couple of months, we laugh. The people come along and they laugh, and we come away from it, and I come away from it just feeling, elated, because I know that whilst we're giving them information, nevertheless, we're doing it in a very relaxed atmosphere, and we laugh a lot, and we're all getting to know each other, and that's fantastic.
And really I'm looking forward to going down to that group and either talking and integrating and just, listening to stories and equally telling mine. Yeah. But, it's a very evocative, it's a very emotive journey, but it's also filled with emotion, and it affects us mentally, physically and emotionally. And to be able to, and that was the one thing that we've always had humor. And through all our other challenges throughout the years, that's the one thing we often say, and especially in the last 2 years, humor really, really gets you through. And it can be the silliest of things. It doesn't matter. Laugh. And I don't know. It is a release. It is a release. It's a release to talk about, and it's a release to laugh and find something that you can laugh about, and something that collectively it just lifts your spirits.
Yes. And I wanted to make a point there. Something that was said to Miriam on a recent visit to her GP. And it's not something that you very often hear said. People need to realize, partners and the person who's got the cancer, it changes you.
Forever.
Forever. And that's it. And I think that's something that needs to be said. And the day this doctor said it, he said it very gently, but we admired his honesty.
I thanked him.
No, it's very true. It changes you, and that's it. And you have to accept that. Both the partner and the person who has the cancer have to accept it. So it's a fact.
Yeah, and no matter how much you carry on, and I mean, even you've said you can't believe what I've achieved in the last 2 years, because you just get on with it. It's not going to sit on my shoulder. But I have my moments and I have my blips, and I am still sort of, I'm going through what I call a fallout, and there are days when I'm not at my best, and that's okay. That is all okay. And we all have those days at the best of times, even if we are in the fullest of our health. But it definitely has changed every aspect of my life, how my outlook, who I am and who I continue to be, but in the main, a good way. And I'm not going to lose my sense of humor, and I'm not going to lose my, every day is a day well spent, and my curiosity for life and my embracing each day and learning each day, that and my passion for what I do, I will not give up on that.
Yeah, and I can definitely feel that in the way that you speak about that. Yeah, you definitely have that strength behind you. And I,
well, you know, I feel for those women who are on their own. You know, who are on their own, and that's why the group that Chris is part of, someone like me as well, for women or indeed men, you know, who are on their own and trying to deal and handle these situations. And you know, it's not about, you know, I have found that some of the most professional people, some of the most experienced, most intelligent, it's nothing to do with that. It's how it impacts and affects each one of us. It's different and it's unique. And we each have something maybe we haven't expressed, or we didn't think we would feel like this. And to be able to voice that, it's so important, you know, it really is.
And I suppose that leads us into the last thing I wanted to ask you, which is a strange question, because I imagine this is actually kind of what we've been talking about for the entire time. But imagine if there's a way that we can kind of distill this a little bit. I was going to say, you know, what advice would you give to someone who is supporting a loved one? But perhaps the more important question then is what would you say to someone who is unsure about how to ask for help, especially if they are someone who is perhaps on their own and doesn't know if they're allowed to ask for help? Because I know sometimes people might feel a sort of, they don't know what's out there. They don't know what they're allowed to ask for. And I think that in itself can be a struggle.
There's a great saying, feel the fear and do it anyway, you know? And I would say is just take that leap of faith that whatever you have gone through, whatever you are going through, there are charities, volunteers, someone like me, who have been through it, the volunteers have been through it. They know, they've experienced it. And even if it's just one question, there is someone within Breast Cancer Now, within someone like me, who can support and help you. And even if it's just to talk about it, no matter how you're feeling, I urge everyone, take that step. Take that step. You know, the links are there. The helplines are there. There's someone else at the other end of the line. My goodness me, being able to talk and listen to, even if it's only 5 minutes, that might be the catalyst that helps you move forward in terms of just for maybe the first time in your life, speaking out how you really, really feel about what you have been through, what you're going through. That's what I would say.
Yes, I'd echo everything Miriam has said there. in addition, from my perspective, if someone is on their own, especially, and I'm talking from experience here, again, from what I'm learning through the cancer support group, they weren't aware of the cancer support group locally. And eventually, they found out. I think doctor surgeries, community hubs, and there are many of them around the country, they have a responsibility to be aware of where there is a cancer support group locally. The larger charities are known about for cancer support. But I think sometimes people want to just come along, and I think that is important. How do you encourage someone to do it? It's a difficult one because it's got to come from the individual. It really has. Maybe a family member might gently encourage
them,
or a friend, or maybe there's a local befriending service. When I was based out down in the Marsh, when I was CEO of this centre that I ran, a charity, we rented office space to a wonderful befriending organisation called CALM, Caring All Together on Romney Marsh. And I am now looking to replicate that in the Rother district, which is where we live now in East Sussex. And I'm currently just waiting for some funding to do some consultation events. Befriending services are around. They're all over the country. Right. And they are a wonderful way to start the ball rolling. To, you know, the volunteers are all properly trained, and they have to be, because everybody, you know, with health and safety nowadays, safeguarding, both sides have got to feel safe. But once you are able to open up to a befriender, whether it's by telephone or having a cup of tea with them each week, it is amazing what can be addressed, the potential challenges that someone, you know, can be facing, but they haven't known who to go and talk to. So I would say look for a befriending service, look for a local cancer support
maybe
group,
a small group
via a community hub, and then go online and look for cancer charities. And one of my focuses as well, alongside the other few things I'm doing, is to develop the name and awareness of someone like me, part of Breast Cancer Now, down here in the Southeast. And it is my intention, again, going forward, and just raise awareness of the services that someone like me, Breast Cancer Now, offer.
Yes.
So those are my suggestions. It's hugely rewarding. And I know the relief that people feel when someone listens to them isn't within the family. And I would urge everybody.
There's a story is being heard. Someone hasn't just listened, but their story has been really not just heard, listened to, but really heard and resonated with.
Yes, yeah.
And that they walk away and it's almost like someone's just taken this weight, you know, off their shoulders. It's so important. And their local charities who maybe they'll, you know, the person who's living on their own, who's been through, you know, hell and back through, you know, through their whatever their cancer story is. But even starting with a group that they were maybe meeting one person who understands will encourage them to, you know, to contact someone like me, because your support, I'm here in East Sussex and it doesn't matter. It's a call away. It is just, I cannot tell you the reassurance and the assurance that I certainly felt when I was at that crossroads.
Yeah, and it is the relief. It's very interesting. When I'm in my professional situation, I don't get upset about it.
No,
when I come out of it and I start talking about it, and I look back on the stories that I've heard now, which, you know, are quite a few now. Yeah, it does upset me.
But and that's okay.
That's okay.
That's also okay.
Hmm. Yeah, I can really see how much it means to you to be a part of this and to be helping other people and how deeply you care about it. And, you know, Breast Cancer Now is very grateful to have people like you sharing support through someone like me and just sharing your support in the community. And that's absolutely fantastic. And yeah, like you say, I think people just knowing that it's out there and feeling the fear, but doing it anyway and just taking that first step.
Right.
Yeah. I really like that. Yeah, let's. I think that's a really important thing to take away from this. But yeah, thank you so much to both of you for kind of being so open and honest. Are there any sort of final things you wanted to know, anything that you would want to direct people towards that you've personally been involved with that you think might be helpful?
No, just don't hesitate to contact someone like me, because for me, without them, I actually don't know where I would be, whether you're at a crossroads, whether you're at the first stages of recovery, whether it's a year down the line or 18 months down the line. Just don't hesitate. You deserve it. You deserve the help and the support, because you may actually, it may inspire you to go on and support someone else.
I would echo everything that Miriam has said there. And I would give a little plug for the Romney Marsh area. Because if anybody needs support because they currently have cancer, if they contact the Romney Marsh Community Hub, we have a thriving cancer support group there. So that's the Romney Marsh Community Hub. They have a website. We will be more than happy to support them and welcome them.
And I hope anyone listening to that we will put links to those in the sort of episode description here.
Thank you.
So those can be found easily. But yeah, for now, I guess all that's left to say is thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your experience and for just being so warm and positive about this. It's been really lovely speaking to you.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Em. Lovely speaking with you today.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.